Speaking of reliability, friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Kirk Gray.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. And welcome. I believe, Kirk, this is our 371st Speaking of Reliability episode. Can you believe
it? Yes. That's a lot of discussions.
Well, you know, I have a feeling that, you know, if we live closer to each other, all of us on the show, and pretty much any of us, including the listening audience, if we got together and our spouses would let us talk shop all evening, we would.
You know? Right.
We would. There's so much to talk about. And I remember you and I started this long, long time ago, you know, you, me, and Adam, and we kind of thought, well, what are we going to talk about? And that has never been a problem.
No, there's always issues in the news or issues that we have with our, you know, we've had recent projects or something, or like my home blenders.
Yeah, my wife. I'm afraid to ask. Are you going to get her a blender for Christmas? Is that going to be part of the ongoing saga there?
She's actually had one that's lived a long life. I think more than 6 months now. So,
oh man, quick, write a review. Yeah, keep her away from the ice cubes. But you know, one of the things that we do get is questions from our listeners or comments from our listeners. And one I saw, it was through LinkedIn a couple of days ago, was on the general topic of the overlap. And it was related to, I work in a factory and I'm a reliability engineer, and there's a quality department in the group, and they're saying they do the reliability stuff and the basic question was, how do I or should I define boundaries between what is a quality thing and what's a reliability thing? And I thought, you know, we haven't talked about that in a long, long time. And I think also combined to it, and you reminded me of it, was that Adam wrote a short article about it, the relationship essentially between quality and reliability. So, right. I don't know. How do you separate? What do you tell people, you know, that how these are the same or different or behave or whatever? How would you answer that question?
Well, I'd more distinguish it by the fact that I see reliability as a sub group of quality.
Well, you're in good company there.
But it's a very, very major portion of it. I mean, obviously, the most important thing to a customer is the equipment operates correctly. Now, if the paint starts flaking off the outside chassis, you know, that's kind of an annoyance and may look appear poorly as to the customer or whoever the user is. I mean, if you had a car and the paint started flaking off, that's a quality issue that doesn't affect its function, maybe. And sometimes it can, of course.
Yeah. Here in California, you know, it's not so much of an issue. We got nice, dry, salt-free air and roads. But your part of the world, I don't know, do they put salt down or do they just wait 10 minutes for the weather to change?
Well, they actually put some salt down or another chemical. I'm not sure that they're still using salt. It might be. But I don't see a real problem in rust around here in cars. I think that they're pretty well sealed. But, you know, obviously if the car, the paint can lead to – the quality of the paint can lead to the failure of a car structurally if it rusts away and water leaks into the engine, you know, or someplace, or those kinds of things can lead to reliability problems. And, in fact – Once the product's designed, then the quality of the manufacturing of the supplier of parts, you know, the variation can lead to a failure, an actual operational failure. So they are tied very closely, but not always. It's quality can be like the the feel of a keyboard over time if it gets mushy or something as far as the key strokes. And that might be, you know, the more subtle differences. But, you know when your product has failed or it's when somebody tries to use it and it doesn't turn on or whatever, or malfunctions during the use. And that's a reliability issue. But they're tied fairly close together, I would say.
Well, you're in good company with that reliability is a part of the quality sphere, essentially. I think it was Deming, or maybe it was Duran, that said, you know, here's the, I think it was 14 or 7 or some other magic number of aspects of quality. And some things are like, it's industrial design, it's feel, right?
Right.
A door handle on the side of a car can be functional. And very, very crude, right? And very, but not lending to the overall experience of using the car door, right? Whatever that means. Or like opening a new iPhone out of the box from Apple. The box itself is a work of art, you know, compared to anybody else's.
Like and, their stores.
And so those are parts of the quality that I think is separate from reliability, yet it has that huge overlap that if that box that we get the iPhone in deteriorates on the shelf and becomes raggedy and falls apart and doesn't actually protect the phone anymore,
right?
Or doesn't create that experience that you expect from Apple unboxing anymore, then it's that's a reliability issue. It's degraded. It's deteriorated. It's the box itself has failed to provide the experience. That's a failure in my mind.
If it does cause the phone to fail, I'd say if it doesn't cause the phone, it's a quality issue. But I don't know that it gets to be kind of a gray area.
You know, and in the end of the day, it doesn't matter, right?
It doesn't matter if the product functions. It's just like if the paint's flaking off or, you know, I've got a crack in my outer case of the protective case that I put around my phone. That's a quality issue, you know, seeing the cracking. But if it doesn't fall off the phone, you know, that'd be causing it. Then it would be a reliability sort of issue. It doesn't reliably stay on the phone, so it's kind of a failure in that case.
So let's use your phone case example. How would you do this one? And this one's a quiz for the audience too. So here's the situation. And I'll use my daughter as the example because she went through a number of phones. And I think your daughter went through some phones too, didn't she?
She's stress tested them to their limits.
She learned that from the master. Don't go break stuff.
I do it more controlled.
That's right. So you get a phone and you go, oh, okay, we got to get her a case for this thing. So you go, you get a case, you unpackage it. And the package says it fits that phone and does all this other stuff, and it doesn't fit, right?
Right.
It failed. You have to take it back, right? So is that a quality failure or is that a reliability failure?
Well, it's a quality failure.
Now, this is a trick question. Be careful how you answer.
Well, it failed to function. Yes. So you could say that from that perspective, yes, it failed to function. So it failed to be a reliable component that you would put on your phone. So, it's failed its function.
So I define it as I don't care whether you call it quality or reliability, to be honest. It's once I take it out of the package, though, and I try to use it, even if it's within minutes of buying it.
Yeah.
It's I'm returning it, right? And I get another product for free. So now I've consumed a piece of your inventory. You've got to, you know, either restock it or address it or a warranty return, or it's going to cost the manufacturer, the company that creates it, it's going to cost them money to deal with it.
Right
now, a phone case, they might say, you know, just throw it away. Here's a new one. Well, now they've doubled their cost of supplying me one case.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that not all companies have a, you know, huge profit margin on their products. So they may have just destroyed their margin for that one transaction.
Right.
Right. And it's in part of standing behind their product and you'll buy that again, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right. And I think that anybody that has a quality failure or something like that is impacts their choice to buy something else and consider, you know, the reliability or the potential reliability. If they see this, you know, not fitting or something to that effect, then they'd probably say, well, maybe they also use, or they would get the feeling that they don't really have the controls and maybe they didn't use the right plastic or polymer material that's going to hold up. And so it has a negative impact to the customer. And I think that does bleed over to the customer's suspicion about the just the potential reliability of something.
That's right.
Because they didn't pay attention to some of the details. Some, you know, the really high-end companies that you know they've paid attention, like a Mercedes or BMW, that they've really paid attention to the detail. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I look at the warranty, too. If they really believe in their product, and this is what's always surprising to me, that, you know, extend the warranties. Because if you really believe you have a quality product, it's not going to fail. Show it to the customer. You know, show that you're behind it by, you know, supporting it that way. But
yeah, it's warranty kind of crosses this line and blurs the line because it's part marketing. Mm-hmm. It's part saying, hey, we stand behind our product, and some legislative. I think Europe requires an 18-month or 2-year. A warranty for a product that produced to the consumer market. And US, I think, is pretty commonly a month. It used to be 3 months.
Yeah, right? It depends on the product, right?
Depends on the product, and they all vary. And they oftentimes it's you know, 47 pages of micro print written by a lawyer so that nobody understands it. That
right, you know, you can't, right.
You know, whatever. But I've had products where I say, you know, this isn't working. I call them and they send me a new one. And right. I don't check to see if it's in warranty or not. And they probably didn't check either. There's this mix of marketing that right. you want to have people tell the story that they stood behind their product and that right. it's the word of mouth kind of stuff. Now back to the difference in quality and reliability. One of the things that, you know, back to this person's question, was inside an organization, especially if you have a reliability team and a quality team, there may well be different boundaries or roles that each plays, right? In a factory, the reliability is generally focused on the equipment creating the products. Right. So our machinery equipments and grinders and blenders and
mold injection,
injection
things like
machines
that.
Yeah. and conveyor yeah. belts and all that stuff. And
you,
right.
You cover that with the, what is it called? RCM. What is it?
Reliability centered maintenance and other.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
And there's other practices there, but a reliability engineer has a role in helping to minimize downtime. Right. And so that you can create a product. The quality team is often then focused on the quality of the product itself that they're making. So they're making sure they get good materials, that the various inspections and tests through the process are there and dealing with issues from the field and so on.
Yeah. Where I've seen a quality department, you know, differentiate between a reliability department. And when I've been in a company that had those two different distinctions, the quality department was had much to do with the supplier relationship and going to the supplier, monitoring their, you know, statistical process control or dealing with variations and second sources and things like that, so that the components coming in were supposedly meeting the specifications and things. Now, if they didn't, they would, of course, cause a possible reliability, a failure of the product to function. So that was a front end leading group that it went into suppliers, did surveys, looked at their manufacturing processes. And of course, that all leads to making a reliable product by having all the suppliers make reliable components.
Yeah, it certainly helps. Yeah, it's related. I think quality engineers in pretty much any role they do are often looking at making sure it functions over time.
You know? Right, and it should be a priority in any quality organization, whether they have a separate reliability group, because I see the quality group not as often being the ones to perform the testing for validation or testing for reliability.
Yeah,
and it varies. You might call it quality, but and I guess the ASQ, you'd have to be. I think you're a member. Are you a member?
Not anymore. No.
Oh, okay. But American Society of Quality, I guess, contains a little bit of reliability. I don't know, Fred. Yeah, you'd have to tell me about it.
Okay. Well, I was the chair of the reliability division. It's now called the reliability and risk division.
Yeah.
Right. And they overlap. I mean, right now I'm teaching a class for CQE prep, the certified quality engineering exam from ASQ. And a group of students are preparing to sit for that exam. So we're going through a course. And there's a bit of reliability in it. Not, you know, it touches on reliability statistics and managing that and design for reliability stuff.
What about
like that.
Testing? Testing or strategies for developing reliability?
Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot. It really only touches the environmental and durability, accelerated testing, halt. All of those things are mentioned in the CQE and dived into much more detail in the CRE, the Certified Reliability Engineering part.
Right.
But what I find is that the boundaries are fluid because both groups, to a large degree, bring statistics and test capability and interest, experimental work, influence onto the design process of the equipment or the product. Generally, both with the same goal of, well, we want to create a product that provides this set of functions and does it well over time, right? And minimize failures and returns and all of those things. And so it's really fluid. How it works. And then the other part of it is that as a reliability engineer, it's perfectly okay to do a design of experiments to support design decisions. It's, you know, we oftentimes have that stats background and skills, or we have testing skills, or we have other skills that may well be classified by all intent and purposes. Well, that's a quality role. Well, so what? We got to get the work done. Let's roll up our sleeves and get busy here. The other piece you see a big overlap is in failure analysis, right? Is something fails, whether it's in a prototype or in production or in the field. What it's a pet peeve of mine is that it hits the dock, right? Or a phone call comes and it hits the dock and it gets back to your product and they go, all right, quality people look at it first. Because it's almost always their fault. And then, no. Right. And usually they're associated with manufacturing. So the manufacturing guys, you know, play with it and go, oh, yeah, you know, well, it's a design issue. And they bounce it over to the design team. And they go, well, it's not our fault. It's marketing. And it kind of is like ping pong, ping ball.
Yeah.
And you know all about that. Right? It bounces all
around.
Over the place. Yeah. Maybe we should create a pinball game that's the quality, reliability, you know, the failure analysis pinball machine. And it regularly fails, and the game is designed to how do you troubleshoot and fix your pinball machine rather than play it. I don't think that would sell.
I don't think so either. But the first thing, Fred, is, and this is really hard. This is one of the difficult things in reliability, quality, and all that is getting the product back. Sometimes, you know, it depends on the cost of the product and its function. But this is one of the challenges in getting the product back and reproducing the problem. We've talked about that in the past.
Yeah.
That, if it's like you could come, the product comes back, the paint's off the chassis or something, and you say, well, that's, I guess that's a failure, and the customer's unhappy, and, that's, for me, it's truly a quality issue.
Well,
it's reliable. It worked. But
right. If you're the paint vendor, right? If you're the one supplying the paint or the manufacturer or the painter, then it's a reliability issue, right? It didn't last as long in the environment. So that's
right.
In my definition, it would
didn't reliably adhere to the metal. Yes.
That's right. And it could be a number of sources of problems, but I don't care whether you call it quality or reliability. I think that's the summary for this one.
Still, anything that makes the customer unhappy about the product, whether it's, how it functions, the controls, where the how they're laid out, that might be a quality. You might say that's a quality of design.
Mm-hmm.
The forethinking that, that went into the product as far as use and ease of use, where the handles are, that might be considered a quality problem. But it's obviously the thing that usually ticks the customer off the most is they try to turn it on and it doesn't function. It doesn't work.
That's right.
Or even worse, it fails during use. And that's, of course, that's the worst. You've started to rely on it and suddenly
It's not happy anymore. And then I'm not happy anymore.
Now you're stuck because you're probably out somewhere. You didn't, like your phone not working or something. You don't have another phone usually with you.
That's right. And it's, and to a large degree, we count on a lot of different products that we have. At least in your house, I guess you don't really count on your blender working all the time. So you might have backups for that.
Yeah.
Margarita on the rocks.
Standby blenders. Redundancy is another way of addressing the reliability issue.
It's a whole other topic.
But that costs you twice as much.
That's right. Or more sometimes.
Right. So, but it's a tough one to define. And I think that sometimes it's a tough to define. And I think that, that you could, just call it, the wrap reliability is certainly under quality. And, that quality includes many more things besides its function.
Mm-hmm.
They're very similar, but, doesn't necessarily have the same impact as a product not working.
That's right. And so it's, I leave it to answer the question, and just a quick summary of it is just, there aren't hard boundaries. What is a reliability role and what is a quality role? They overlap significantly, as both Kirk and I have talked about. And the idea is, within an organization, is we'll have that discussion. Each group or each person brings different skills to the table, and let's go focus on the problems. We're on the same team here, right? Let's go fix things and make the products and our systems more reliable and more able to create quality products. And that's the bottom line is, don't worry about labels.
Right. The only challenges I've seen in companies is when they kind of divide those two organizations and make them report to different people, that there is a lot of finger pointing sometimes across the lines.
That's where you just got to, be the bigger person and go, hey, let's solve these problems. Let's go make this work.
Right. That's just one of the, problems of the politics in companies is competition between departments.
Yeah. It doesn't matter if it really doesn't matter if you're all there to help solve problems and help the customer get a better experience. It's hard to argue that, that's not my job. let's get out of this.
Yeah.
That craziness.
Yeah. You might all go down together if you don't solve the problem.
That's right.
Because the company will be out of business. So, keep the focus on what's important to the customer. And I think that's the way to make a functioning co-teams, co-workers.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So if you'd like to lend us a comment or a question, or obviously you can get a hold of us through LinkedIn if you'd like to connect with us there and get the information we share in our various feeds. But more directly, you can go to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and you can leave a comment or a suggestion or some feedback there, and we'd love to hear from you. As we mentioned at the top of the show, is that we're over 350, I think 370 shows now. And
yeah, while we're, I didn't have to do all those.
That's right. And, you know, and while
18 or 20, I don't know.
Oh, you've got more than that. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. It's been 3 years. What? How long have you been doing this, Fred? Three, 4 years.
Almost
now?
4 years now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we started off with three shows a week. That got pretty hard to keep the schedule going just because of everything else we're doing. So we retired to two shows or retreated to two shows a week, and that seems pretty sustainable. I have heard from a few people that they'd like us to go back to like every day, and I'm like, this takes a lot. It takes us a half hour or so to record it, and then there's a lot of other stuff that happens to get it all together and posted.
Yeah,
but we sort of appreciate the thing that makes it really really fun is when we get to talk shop, right? And we get to talk a bunch about what we like to talk about. And we get to address questions and answers and include our listeners in with the discussion. And when we get feedback and we get comments and suggestions and ideas, one, it confirms somebody's listening. And two, it expands the circle of who we're talking to and who we're and what topics we talk about. So we really appreciate that.
Right.
All right. So with that, Kirk, let's wrap this one up.
Okay, Fred, we'll talk again.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.